Hello and welcome to Philosophy. I'm Will. Okay, just some quick plugs up the top because this is an episode people have been waiting for. Of course, with this podcast, you're always waiting for episodes because it's irregular. There was one with Montaigne that went up a few weeks ago, which is excellent if you haven't checked that out yet. And if you don't know her story, I think it's just a really fun one to hear and discover her as an artist and who she is. If you don't know her already, or if you're a fan of hers already, then I think you really enjoy that one. But this podcast series is irregular because it's hard to do. And to be honest, you don't see what goes on behind the scenes, which is me giving up on it most weeks. I think there's been probably three times in between the last episode and this episode where I told people I'm never doing that podcast again. But then one of my guests that I've been trying to get on for a while confirms and it's back on. So anyway, there's a couple of those that have happened recently. So there's going to be at least a couple more episodes. And by then, I probably will have booked in somebody else. But anyway, thanks for tuning in. No, I really do appreciate it. And I've been wanting to have today's guest, Tim Minchin, on the podcast for a very long time, pretty much since I started it. And we've been trying to coordinate it. And to be honest, I wish it was one of those episodes where I had 2 hours or 3 hours with the guests where we could have kept talking because we barely got warmed up in the hour or so that I had with him. But we dive straight in. So the good news is I think you're really going to enjoy this. It's always a delight to talk to Tim. And if you want to hear him talk more about his career and stuff that I would have actually loved to talk to Tim about because I am fascinated by his career and the path that he's chosen and how he's kind of, you know, negotiated the great success that he's had. And they were all questions that I would have loved to get to. The idea of whether he has doubts and what it is that sort of drives him professionally and creatively. But we just started talking about life, and this podcast is really about life, so we just stuck there. But if you would like to hear Tim talk about those things, he firstly mentions Richard Herring's excellent podcast, so you can check that out on the internet. Just Google Richard Herring and podcast and Tim Minchin. So he talks about that stuff a bit there. But also this weekend, LA Podfest. So I'm in LA at the moment. Flew out between Gruen episodes, so we tape on a Tuesday night. I flew out on Wednesday, and we do TOFOP, live TOFOP at Podfest, 2 o'clock on Saturday, and then I fly out Saturday night to be back for my Gruen meeting on Monday. So it's a bit of a hectic schedule, but I squeezed in this one with Tim, which was really exciting while I was over here also. And Tim is being interviewed by Stu Goldsmith on his Comedians Comedian podcast, which I have been on previously. It's a great podcast. Check that out if you would like to hear me talk about you know, my craft and how I go about it. I am on that, but there are a bunch of comedians, brilliant comedians with great podcasts, and they are doing a live show at LA Podfest. So if you're in LA, come down to the podcast festival on the weekend. It's going to be huge. But if you are in the rest of the world and you would like to watch the live stream of the LA Podcast Festival, here's how you do it. You just go to LA Podfest, you follow the link, and you put in the code TOFOP, T-O-F-O-P. You get $5 off. It's $20. You get $5 off, and TOFOP and myself and to help this podcast and all those sort of things, get $7 back. So for anyone who watches on the live stream, there's over 40 podcasts. You can watch them all live, or they archive them for, I think, a month afterwards. So, you know, I actually subscribe myself every year. It's brilliant. It's brilliant value. You get to discover a lot of podcasts, and TOFOP's going to be huge. Dave Anthony, Gareth Reynolds, Nick Cody, Laura House, Matt Kirsch and Andy Peters, Graham Elwood, like a cast of thousands dropping in on the podcast. Anyway, it's going to be fun. So if you want to watch that, watch that. All right, what else? That's pretty much it. Oh, I'm doing a run of improv shows at Giant Dwarf in Sydney. So basically, they're completely improvised stand-up shows. So every night different. We just make up the show in the room. When I say we, I mean me, but, you know, the audience is involved a bit. I ask some questions and get to meet some people and try to weave a whole show out of one night. So Giant Dwarf, I think it's the last week of October. You can find the details. I plug them everywhere. All right, here you go. Thanks for listening. If you like the podcast, share it around. If you enjoyed Tim, you know, sort of let him know, you know, on Twitter and all those sort of places that you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll talk to you again soon. All right, see ya. I'm Will Anderson. Welcome to Willosophy with Will Anderson. I am Will Anderson from the title. I've said my name a lot there at the start of it. I have a guest. I'm just going to get straight into it and then I'll get to my apologies. I'm going to start with some apologies this episode. But guest, who are you?
I'm Tim Minchin. It's quite hard to say in the morning.
Right, your own name.
Tim Minchin.
That's like your own vocal warm-up.
It is. And when you're a bit blocked up, it's Tim Bidgett. It's hopeless.
Well, welcome, Tim. Thank you very much.
I'm
going to start with apologies. Firstly, thank you for you coming over to my house. I appreciate that. I know that
it's a pleasure.
No, but I appreciate it because
it's a long way west for me. I try not to come this far west.
Right, and I got in yesterday, and like ordinarily, I'd be like, I'll come over to yours, but there's a bit of equipment, and that's what I'm going to apologize about because at the moment. I have you speaking into a sock.
Yeah.
Not a microphone sock, but like a microphone with an actual just sock on it.
A sock from your foot.
Not from my foot.
Now, it looks like it's been worn, though.
It has been worn. So this is what I... Okay. So here's
Foot is it? Holy crap.
Here's what I want to talk you through.
Is this going to change everything?
Well, but basically...
I mean, my mouth is really close to it, just for context.
Okay. So I want to walk you through this. And if at some stage, like after this, and this is why I wanted to do this right up the top, if after this you feel uncomfortable with the sock, we can then change the sock. We can remove the sock, you know, but I'll walk you through it first.
Okay.
So basically, my podcast equipment, I went on a holiday to Spain. Some of the listeners might know about this. And my podcast equipment got stolen out of my bag. So some guy at an airport in Mallorca now is starting his own podcast, apparently. So
that's good. Like, as long as they use it. It's probably okay,
You know what? If that's not an origin story for a nice bit of entertainment in that part of the world, then I'll feel like...
You're a sponsor.
I'm doing my bit.
Uh-huh.
It's like an outreach scholarship program. Totally.
Yeah, you're donating equipment to poor podcasters.
Right. Uh-huh. Oh, well, he's got ambition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good origin story. Like, how'd the podcast start?
Wow. Well, I was in the airport. So just nicking shit.
And that's how I turned my life around.
Totally. Luckily, you didn't steal medical equipment or something. Backyard surgeon.
So since then, I have some old secondhand stuff. So this thing we're talking into has no back on it. There's like no place to put the batteries anymore. And these microphones normally had like, you know, socks on them. But I got here to LA yesterday and I realized I did not have any.
You were socially frustrated.
And then last night, I experimented with a whole bunch of things.
And socks did it.
But they're not my socks. And this is the thing that I wanted to talk you through.
Okay.
Because I was like, if I'm going to put an actual sock on there, firstly, like the sock has to be clean. But secondly, I then suddenly had this thing where I was like, well, I have female socks here or I have like my socks here, which is the more generous. Like, you know, when you have someone over and you use like the good, you know, plates or whatever.
Yeah, totally. You get like, the good sexy socks out.
Right. I
These
make
don't
sure.
look like girls' socks though.
No, they're girls' socks.
Big feet? A girl with big feet?
Medium-sized feet, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So whose socks are they?
They're a bit stretched. They're my girlfriend's socks.
What's her name? Okay. Good.
So, but they've been washed twice since last night.
I'd be happy either way.
Because I washed them twice. I was like, you know what?
You hand washed them twice?
No, not hand washed. I put them through twice. With some other things. I didn't exclusively just wash them, but...
I have very little squeam in me. I don't get... Squeam is not a big part of my life. I don't get squeamish. I don't like squashing cockroaches. Uh-huh. I really don't like that. And I don't like people talking about their skin, like pimples and stuff. Even that word makes me feel uncomfortable. Apart from that, talking into someone else's footwear, not a problem at all.
Yeah.
Hugs and sharing cups and, you know, I'm fine with all of that.
No, I like that. I mean,
I'm not germ-phobic or sort of weird about anything particularly.
No.
If I find a hair in my food, I'll be like, oh, someone's hair fell in the food, and I'll take it out and eat the fucking food.
Right.
Yeah. It's usually my hair anyway.
You're not going to go, I'm going to eat that hair just because it's there. But
no, but it's no dirtier.
I mean, if you can take it straight out.
Yeah. It's a hair. It's not any worse than the bacteria that's already on your food that you can't see.
Yeah.
Or the little bugs crawling around in your eyelashes, you know. Like, you can't get too squeamish, otherwise you'll freak out about the microorganisms on your skin.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, well, every time I, like, go to the bathroom and I look at my toothbrush there, you know, I'm reminded of that thing that always goes around of, like...
Yeah, 20 billion animals live on your toothbrush.
Right. And I always look at it as I'm urinating. I go, yep, that's my toothbrush.
Yeah.
And then I do nothing with that information.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do not put it further away.
And all the sort of fecal particles.
And next time I brush my teeth,
that's right.
I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Because that's the world. But do you think we're too concerned about those things anyway? Like, there is this kind of, you know, school of thought that we've become, you know, too sort of germ phobic or whatever, to our own detriment.
Well, information's dangerous. I mean, you know, like if someone does a study that shows a correlation between, you know, we overreact on everything we learn because of its recency, you know. So if the latest study shows fat is bad, we all stop eating fat, and then somehow that study becomes less relevant over time, usually because it's improved upon by another study. But diet's a classic one, and health, you know, these studies that show a 0.1% improvement in outcomes if you do this behavior, and we're not very good at numbers, so we all go, we'll do that behavior, and like 0.1%, just don't do that, but it doesn't matter. Like, you know, the things you should do while you're pregnant is a good example, and I'm not going to sort of lay claim to any special knowledge about that. But, you know, like, all the studies that we do when people are pregnant, because obviously a loss of a pregnancy is a terrible thing, and we're trying to control that by studying it, and we find some outcome that's like, yeah, across a population of 20 million people, you know, if you don't eat soft cheese, you'll have two less deaths or whatever. That's a significant stat, arguably. My numbers are wrong, but you know what I mean. But that, on an individual level, that's basically zero. It'll make no difference to your life. You know, we're not very good at that.
What you're saying is Tim Minchin says eat soft cheese while you're pregnant.
What?
And that's what you said.
Not
right?
If 20 million people are listening. Right. If only two, if two people are listening, then yeah, just do it.
Yeah, probably.
Take the risk.
The odds are in your favour.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I do know what you know. I mean, this is a silly way of putting it, but the other day I was holding a baby, and I was reminded of the paranoia that people have around babies' necks. And of course, they're floppy and they go backwards and you have to protect their neck.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the thing that, like, as a person who doesn't have my own children,
that's the thing.
Every time you grab a baby, it's the thing, but it's also the thing you're told constantly, protect its neck.
Yeah. So
okay, now here's my controversial position. I have never heard of a baby having, like, some sort of neck-related
neck injury
thing.
Because
the level of paranoia, because surely it must happen all the time regardless, right? I reckon that they're saying it's a bigger issue than it is.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you shouldn't protect the neck. I'm just saying this massive paranoia about neck protection seems disproportionate.
As a rule, don't let a baby flop around too much.
Right.
Yeah. But it's like and then there's measurability factors going on here. So, like, how have we got onto this? But if a soft cheese, you know, thing carries a particular bacteria that one in X million times can get into the system and cause damage to your baby, then of course we should act on that data. But things that are harder to measure, like the stress that mothers have while they're pregnant because they're worrying about soft cheeses and, you know, uncooked meats and stuff, that stress probably has a greater effect on pregnancy outcomes. All the accumulated stress of the way you're meant to behave, don't have a glass of wine, oh my God, you had a glass of wine, and all the weird looks from LA mums or whatever, that's probably worse for you than the more likely to have a negative outcome.
I mean,
but that's very hard to measure. So,
but most people my age were born like out of a generation where like the healthy option during pregnancy was to switch to menthols.
You know? Our generation's pretty damaged though. I mean, we hope the next one's better.
I think I do sometimes think that's what it's the heart of a lot of our stuff, which is going, yeah, we turned out pretty bad.
Yeah, that's
that we
right.
kind of know that cool. like. There was some mistakes made, and we're the result of that mistakes, and that's why we're so resentful of the next generation, because they're like, "Wow, like
we're gonna have to fix your shit."
Yeah,
yeah. I think, So I don't know. I think we're probably in Western, in places like Hollywood. People are. The more knowledge you have and the more luxury you have in your life, when I say people in Hollywood, I'm obviously talking about the people that I have the pleasure / honor / horror of spending my life with at the moment, you know, affluent people. The less problems you have to solve that are real and tangible, the more problems you will always find problems, things to stress about, things to try and control. It's human nature to try and control outcomes in a chaotic world, right? So we're like, okay, I want to control, you know, the safety of my children, obviously, you know, my job and my happiness. I'm going to get happiness. I'm going to do some happiness by doing these seven things that I've heard are good for the happiness-ness in it. And then our bodies in LA, in a sort of post-religious world, that's the religion, is health and stuff. And so I don't know, I feel like in an affluent, the more affluent society is, the more microscopic the concerns get because there's nothing real to worry about. And so they start obsessing over the latest study showing that, you know, GMOs is a perfect example, or actually GMO is not a perfect example because that's another whole freaking topic. But, you know, they'll eating clean, you know. They don't even know what the term means, or detoxing, which is just an advertising phrase that means absolutely nothing in medical science. It's just, but they, like, really smart, critical, otherwise critical people in LA are just dumb about diet, like dumb about obsessing about silly stuff, you know. Like,
but is that, does, where do you think that comes from? Because, you know, if you think of the universe as ever expanding and you subscribe to that kind of vague notion that everything we do by the nature in the context of the universe makes things more difficult, like things are never going to get more simple. They're constantly getting more difficult, everything that we do, right?
Sure.
Then what? Where is that desire for order or for things that we all inherently have in it? Is it just so inherent? Is it just a reaction to that? Because we know that we can't, you know, control anything on a grander scale, that we need to control something on a smaller scale. Like,
I think that's a very good way of putting it. And we can't even control anything on a smaller scale, right, really. I mean, we're doing really, really well at looking after ourselves. I mean, humans are incredible at keeping themselves alive and creating technologies to keep themselves more comfortable and to control the world as much as they can. But we are driven as beings to utterly control it, to make sure we're not victims of the hand of fate, right? So in the old days, we'd create religions to make it feel like there was inevitability, right? It doesn't matter if my kid dies because he's with the Lord now and I'll see him soon, which is a very, very natural and perfectly understandable instinct.
Right. And by the way, like at the time,
yeah,
probably fucking nailed that.
Yeah.
Like, do you mean for the order of society, yeah, at that point in your evolution, the person who came up with, hey, let's just tell everybody, yeah, that when, fantastic, your kid dies, that everything's going to be cool.
Yeah.
That really would have solved a lot of issues.
That evolved, that set of ideas. The reason religion, you know, evolved out of every society is that those instincts of fear, we're very, very bad at going, oh, well, it's fucking chaos.
Yeah.
And I might get struck down or I won't. And if I get struck down, my life's over and that's it. And we'll, yeah, never see each other again. Like, it's really, really hard to sit with. And that is why it's very, very hard to sit with. And even if we don't believe in a religion and we don't believe that we're going to go to paradise and live forever, God knows when that became a desirable idea, but you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. My idea of heaven is a good lie down where yeah, I never have to worry about anything.
Yeah, where
again.
I have no thoughts. Oh, that's death. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can have that.
I'm done now. Sometimes if there's turbulence on the plane, I unbuckle my belt.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And
totally.
Lean in. That's my version of lean in. I'm like, turbulence? All right. Let me get ready in the most unconventional, whatever the opposite of the brace position is, that's where they'll find
when
my body.
When they search the wreckage, how do I make this a gag,
right?
How can I get a laugh out of my death?
Yeah, I'm ready.
You're definitely gonna get a laugh out of your death. I don't know how you're gonna do it, but I'm sure you'll manage
it. I hope so.
But yeah, and so in a secular, in a post-religious world, then of course the instinct's not gone, and so we do useful things if you believe keeping humans alive is useful. Obviously in a macro level it's a bit of a pain, but we do useful things like create medicines and look after, find ways to not smoke and have a better diet and exercise and all those tangibly empirical things that keep you alive and keep you from the coming in of the darkness, the encroaching darkness of impending death. We do everything we can to make it feel like we're gonna beat her, or at least we're gonna win for a bit longer. And we do all that because we're just pushing death back, because that's the human condition, is this horrible screaming sound in the back of your head going, you're gonna die. And we do,
but
what
there's
we
gotta
can.
Be an like an evolutionary, like, you know, reason for that, right? That's the thing that keeps us kind of moving forward, like in an evolutionary sense. Well, because otherwise, if you genuinely, because I theoretically believe in what you said before, which is that, you know, of course, like I could step out of here tomorrow and get hit by a car or like whatever. I could just drop dead. I'm at an age now where it's not even unreasonable that I could just drop dead. And they would go, oh, it's a bit young, but he's in now.
He did
drop
smoke a lot. Yeah.
And now he's in the drop dead zone.
Drop dead
like
zone.
I feel I am now. Yeah. Like essentially once you're in your anything past your sort of early 40s, you are in a acceptable just drop dead.
Yeah.
They go, what did he die of? Oh, yeah, he dropped dead.
Yeah, he died.
Okay, well, yeah. I guess
he did one of those deaths that you get these days.
Right. So I believe in that, but you can't actually live in that like every second of your day or live like there is no tomorrow. Like these things are set up, even if it is our work or our things that we decide are important, so that we don't just live in that moment like that, because that would...
No, and without a doubt, alongside evolving, I mean, obviously humans, your genes the two things we've evolved... The macro things we've evolved is we want to live and we want to fuck. So we want to keep ourselves alive long enough so that we can fuck. And this is what, this is selfish gene. This is about keeping your genes alive. Our genes have evolved to teach us to stay alive and fuck. And some of us don't do much of either. But, you know, we're happiest when we're doing as much as possible of both. And so the motive's clear. But the other thing we've evolved is, as you say, happy naivety or sort of blissful ignorance, right? So although we know we're going to die and that our genes are screaming, don't die, don't die, that's going to be terrible. And we've evolved things like love and stuff to keep us connected. It'll be very sad when we die. And all these things are functions of evolved properties. Sometimes they're emergent properties. They're not directly, you know, there's a whole conversation about how love or how religion are have evolutionary advantage. However, you don't need everything humans are doesn't need to have had a statistical sort of survival advantage in the past. Some of them emerge, things like love and religion, probably, although you could trace an evolutionary seed for them, they evolve without... Evolutionary pressure is not the only pressure that makes stuff, right, in human society and stuff. But we have definitely...
Because it also, like, the idea of that evolution, like, that, I guess, side-by-side evolution, like, one thing being, you know, fully functional, it's like he brings his mate. Like, it's like, you know, it's like, look, Seth Rogen's going to be in this thing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're like, Jonah Hill's also here.
Yeah.
And then Jonah Hill just kind of goes off and has his own career, like, independent of the Seth Rogen sort of...
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And it's no one ever says, hey, Jonah shouldn't be here. So Jonah never goes away.
Because Jonah came with Seth.
But Jonah wasn't actually essential to the evolution. Jonah was just always there.
Humanity didn't need Jonah, but it did need Seth to survive.
Yeah, but we didn't want Jonah to go away.
Poor Jonah.
And now we think Jonah is essential.
This is really, really good. I'm trying to work out... Shit, this is perfect.
Now we think we actually need Jonah more than we need Seth.
Yeah, totally.
We just haven't...
And we're trying to work out why we evolved Jonah, but actually he was just a side effect of Seth.
A lovable, adorable, award-winning side effect. Oh,
Jonah. but fact that, sorry, to back to what you were saying, which is that mostly on a day-to-day level, we don't think about it, and that's a very, very good attribute of humans as well, which is that we kind of suspend our disbelief. We sort of don't believe our deaths. Most of the time, we're not present to the tininess of the time we're alive. We're not present to the incredible risks we're at all the time we're not present to the fact that the very thing that makes our skin replace itself is also the process that makes cancer grow. The fact that cell division can go bad at any moment in many, many different places in our bodies. If we were present to that, we'd live in constant anxiety and fear. And that's what anxiety and depression and stuff, that's what they are. They're kind of lack of the drugs that make us ignorant, happily ignorant of how fucking scary it is. You know?
I mean, you know, I have had people close to me in my life whose stories I won't share because they're their stories, not my stories. But just having seen, like, and talked to people, you know, when they are going through those things about the things that they are worried about, they are all things that when you just list them, you go, oh, you know, no, you know fair. What? They that's are all totally typical. Fair. They are, if I thought about those things that much, I got to be honest with you, yeah. that would really get me down too. Yeah,
take this pill and yeah. you think about it. It doesn't right. solve the problem.
What happened to your like level of just blurring out naivety that yeah, we all do day to day to get on right. with our lives? Like, yeah. And you're like, I mean, I get it. It's like, you
well, know. Well, it's 3 a.m. when you wake up and you're jet lagged, you know, and when you've got kids. I mean, there's the fear that crashes in on you when you're brain has kind of got its defenses down. Just you cannot believe you'll be able to wake up the next morning and not have that fear. It feels absolutely accurate and true and real that I should be constantly petrified when my kids are not in my sight that they're going to get hurt. And that's correct. 3 a.m. me right. is right. But daytime me is happily no. right. flooded with some other right. shit going
you're
down.
You're
going
to get like, nothing eh. done if I'm that guy's get nothing there all done. Day.
And of course, 3 a.m. me is not right because statistically they'll be fine.
Right.
And I do a bit in one of my very, very rare new bits of comedy I've got, which says exactly that. You can't live your life on the expectation that something statistically unlikely is going to happen. It's exactly this conversation that I do this bit about live each day as if it's your last. That's it's a stupid fucking thing to say, yeah. you know. You should live each day as if it's the first of yeah. 10,000 or so that you're going to have yeah. to live where your actions have ramifications.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, have life. A look at, yeah, that's, yeah. but that is the thing, right? You got to, if you're living in the moment, you've got to at least live in the repercussions of the moment, which is statistically likely to happen.
Yeah, that it's you're almost like, definitely going to have.
You know what? Let's yeah. let's just not go home yeah. tonight because I'll yeah. probably die on the way home. Yeah. Probably not.
Probably not. You'll probably actually, wake up tomorrow morning full yeah. of the maggots of remorse. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. You're going to be in trouble with your wife. You're going to be in trouble with your boss. Yeah. Like, this is literally yeah. months and months of you having a. yeah. Is it worth it, dude? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You yeah. know what? Maybe just go home now, yeah. wake up fresh, and enjoy that moment much more than you'd enjoy exactly. any moment that's happening in the next 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. You might not live to see tomorrow, but you probably will. whether you like it or fucking not, you know, unless you're going to do something active about it.
All right. Tim mm-hmm. mentioned, do you have a philosophy? That's the question that I ask in the podcast, yeah. but really, it's just a conceit. You know,
well, this is it. We're sort of on it.
Yeah. You know? Okay. Good.
This right. is my philosophy.
Well, that's what normally happens anyway.
Yeah. You know,
it's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
Has it always been? I'm interested in. You know, and look, it's hard to even know where to start with you, but I'm interested in like how early, because I think people see you now, and we'll get to that, and we've already got to it in some part, as a person who does think about these things, and then has. Opinions and like, you know, hopefully kind of well researched or kind of, you know, good points of view that have been at least thought through, mm-hmm. you know.
Read, I think people read a couple
do,
of books.
Yeah, but I feel like people do, you know, but you have a sense of, you know, that you are still an entertainer and all those sort of things. But I think people, where did that come from? That's what I want to know. Where's the origin story of that? Because there's got to have been a point in your life where you weren't, you know, read up on these things or yeah. even interested in these things. How far back would I have to go to find a Tim Minchin that wasn't interested in looking at the world like that?
I don't know. And that's interesting, I guess, because I haven't really been asked like that. Because I do look back and I can trace things like my interest in alternative medicine, you know, in false science, in quackery and bullshit and how sort of susceptible we are to because of our obsession with our bodies and stuff, how susceptible we are to dodgy science, probably comes back to I'm from a medical background, so I've always had this dad going, you know, I'd go, oh, my friend, you know, had asthma and he did this thing, and dad's like, oh, we'd have to see the data on that, wouldn't we? And I'm like, that's stupid, my friend got better. And yeah. it took me a long time to understand that an anecdote is not data. I mean, that's a really simple step to take, but it's actually not something someone says that to you in a classroom. It doesn't really resonate until you really start to understand numbers and start to understand the flaws in humans. In,
right.
You have to understand confirmation bias. And
the way the human brain works that we're like, that, you know, if someone you know tells you something, mm-hmm.
that's
that
worth you accept more that than 10,000 data points. Yeah.
That's why word of mouth in advertising is still the most powerful
totally.
Way of saying it's at the heart of all of those things.
Absolutely.
Very easy to understand.
Totally. But until you get your head around it, until you get your head around how many mistakes humans make. So there's a few things that, there's like this set of critical thinking rules or ideas that once you know them, you can't unknow them. And I don't know, I'd love to write a small book because it's everywhere, but it'd be quite nice to do a sort of flippant, silly, funny version of it. And I do it in my shows, obviously. I talk about all this stuff. But, you know, if you understand that the causal fallacies, that just because you've got a cold and you take some vitamin C and you get better, humans inclined to go causal. It's causal. The vitamin C made me get better. And you're like, well, no, colds are self-limiting diseases. Your body fights them and your body wins nearly all the time against colds. And whatever you took, you'll think fixed it, right? So once you understand causation and the difference between causation and correlation, once you understand confirmation bias, which is, you know, once you've taken that vitamin C, next time you take it again and you go, ah, it worked again. And then if you take it a few times and it doesn't work, human tendency is to discard that data and only keep the data that supports the hypothesis that you've generated out of your false causal assumption, right? So, and then you've got, and then big ideas like Occam's razor, the idea that the solution to any question is most likely the answer that requires the introduction of the least new assumptions. So if you see a light in the sky, it's probably a weather balloon or a thing, because to assume it's aliens requires introduction of the assumption that not only are there intelligent beings in the near galaxy, but they visit us and don't say hi.
Right.
It's a huge assumption, whereas the weather balloon requires the introduction of no new. So that's Occam's razor. Yep. And then, you know, so you get this toolbox, right? And once you've got it, it's firstly very... And more than anything, the fallibility of human memory, the fact that you just, that you're, and then you go all the way into what it is to be a human, but our idea of ourselves are just a bunch of narratives, you know, just a bunch of stories we tell. And those stories are susceptible to all these human foibles and thinking we are the hero of our own story or the victim of our own story. We're always at the center of everything. And it's all bullshit. Our memories are terrible.
I mean, I always say to people, I say, if you want to know something that happened in my life, don't ask me.
Yeah,
totally. I am an unreliable narrator.
You are the worst possible
narrator. Like, I am the worst. I did a whole bit in one of my shows, but like in my last, like special in Willuminati, about, it's 15 minutes about me going to this first ever gig I did in America. And on the way to the gig, I'm looking for a sign, and Matt Damon stumbles out of this like New York cab and like, yeah, says this thing to me. And this story has been my favorite story all my life. It's like this origin story of me coming to America, and it's so integral. But like the reveal, spoilers, but you know, it's been out for ages, is at the end that did not happen. It happened to my girlfriend, and she told me about it on the way to that gig, and somehow in my memory it all got. But I swear, like I tell this thing.
Yeah, you can see it.
Right? I can see it. Like this story,
you can see him stumbling out of the car.
I can see the whole thing.
And do you do that? My siblings and I steal stories off each other all the time. I'll be like, oh, remember that time I went, and my sister's like, that's me. And I'm like, that's fucking my story. And she's like, no, that was my story. You know, like we do it all the time. We are bad, you know. And when you start to understand that the whole legal system in Western society, in all the world, is based on the idea that humans remember shit accurately, I mean, it's a total nightmare. We are hopeless, you know. And so I guess I am neurologically primed to be the sort of person that enjoys thinking about that shit. And then a few experiences happen, you know. You get a friend who died of something that they, one of these interesting diseases that doesn't have a cure, and you go through with them an experience of all the quacks who say, do this. And you just think, oh my God, my friend's dying and people are trying to sell her shit. I mean,
right.
It's very, very, makes you very cross, you know. And then, oh, you know, when my wife first had a baby and she had breastfeeding problem, and some doctor recommended someone a homeopath, and I didn't really know what a homeopath was, and they come around and then I read up on it and go, my wife's in terrible pain and really emotionally distressed because in the way women are under a huge pressure, and she wants to breastfeed and she's in pain, and there's someone selling us sentient violet, and it's just
really expensive cordial.
I know, and it's just bullshit, and I just... And so,
like, but that's the thing.
You intersect.
Like, there's
with
a
these
part
things,
of you that says, like, you know, if I've got a cold and I'm silly enough to go to a homeopath and get my thing and whatever, who cares, right?
Yeah, that's
right. But there's the other part of you goes, oh, when people are in this like level of pain and you're selling them like quackery,
it's an ethical issue,
isn't it?
Yeah,
because they could be off getting actual treatment. There's this Australian woman that I don't want to like talk about her too much because I feel like she's got some like mental health problems and I don't want to like kick someone when they're down despite what happened beforehand. But her name was Belle Gibson.
Yeah.
And the people I would like to give a kick on the way through were the publishers of her book and the people, because people were like, well, we didn't know it was which, you know, like, of course you did. You know, remember when she said,
and if
that you
didn't,
cure,
you're not doing
cure cancer
freaking
with
job.
Soup or whatever
yeah.
it was.
Yeah.
Then the minute she says that, because if you could cure cancer with soup, yeah. guess what you'd be able to get at hospital?
Yeah.
Soup when you come in straight away. They wouldn't
you get all their soup. Right. That's what yeah.
they would literally have a soup kitchen. That'd be they'd take you through the soup kitchen on the way.
On the
in.
Way.
Everyone would get a soup first. Just
I totally
soup.
Agree about Belle. She the reason for those listeners who don't know, and I agree, I think we should talk about witch huntery and our I mean, I guess it is a very common thing to talk about at the moment, because the question of how badly we need to lynch someone that did something wrong and when we let off, you know.
Right.
And that, but Bell Gibson did a terrible thing in that yeah. she sold quack cancer cures on the basis of a story that she had cured her own cancer.
Yes.
She never had cancer.
No, she made it up.
Now that upsets people.
Yeah.
I don't have, if she did have cancer, ate soup and got better, or she didn't have cancer, ate soup and said it made it better. They're both total
yeah.
lies.
Yeah, it doesn't
and
matter.
And to sell...
Because neither of them, the soup cured the cancer.
They're both not based on science. Neither of them,
yeah.
exactly. The soup never cured no cancer.
Right.
Not in the one
the
with cancer.
Cancer or the actual
or the
cancer.
Real cancer. Exactly, yeah. Will. And so there's no moral distinction for me. Every person who's ever done a book saying this is a cure for a disease that kills people that is not supported by rigorous, double-blinded studies... clinical trials is immoral.
Right.
Is unethical.
It's the same
extremely
thing.
Extremely unethical. The fact that her origin story is bullshit is kind of like, well, what a weirdo. Like,
yeah.
as you say, obviously has a problem
right.
with lying and stuff. But
yeah.
that's not the
but
ethical.
It's the
that's
fact
not
that,
the ethical issue.
Yeah, no, it's the fact that we, allow a society, like, are in a society where that sort of stuff isn't laughed out
every time somebody
says it.
Yeah.
Like, that some of it is, like, really, you know, there's a guy in Australia called Pete Evans who's, like, a celebrity chef. He hosts My Kitchen Rules. He's also got a lot of opinions about, like, paleo diets and, like, giving babies bone broth and
yeah.
how, you
yeah.
know, sunscreen causes cancer and, like, you know, you shouldn't drink water and milk's bad
wow.
for you and all sorts of,
and
you
it's
know.
All good, healthy, good Aussie, healthy.
Yeah. And he know. Gets so much airtime and print time and all these sort of things where he's really, you know, basically when he put out his book, you know, there was doctors saying this will kill children.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if people actually follow
no,
this.
No, he should go to jail. I mean, probably he should go to jail or get all his profits taken off him and donated to medical science.
But instead he gets pages and pages of, like, free coverage.
You know David Avocado Wolf? Is there a guy called David Avocado Wolf in Australia?
I mean,
I'm pretty sure there is.
I hope there is.
I think there
I
is.
Hope there is.
Shit, you know, and my friend's
David Avocado Smash Wolf, is it? I think.
Smashed Avocado Wolf. Smashed Wolf Avocado. Oh, my God. Anyway, yeah. So I don't know why I'm so interested. The bad part of me that makes me... The negative part of my personality is self-righteousness. You know, like, we're all self-righteous beings.
Uh-huh.
That also links to the lynching, the internet lynching thing. We're all very self-righteous. We want to talk about being the center of your own narrative. We want to be right. We want to show people we're right. We're awful, and I acknowledge that in myself. So
and,
when I get
and
up,
then we frame the world in a way where we are right.
Where so, we're right, and it's honorable. Like, so me getting up and ranting against alternative medicine... I can frame that, say, well, it's an ethically terrible thing and someone needs to stand up and speak. And religion, and, you know, and we could tell you, I'd love to hear your thoughts, assuming you heard it on my Cardinal Pell song, which was, you might not have actually, it was very much in Australia.
We'll get to that.
But, you know, so I do these grand, morally righteous things in my comedy and my work, and I frame it as me doing good for the world, but... A lot of it has come from, I'm right and I get paid to be right. Like, we're all built of that gross stuff as well. But if you're going to be built of self-righteousness, it's good to have science to back you up, so at least your self-righteousness is manifesting itself in a positive way in the world, not a negative way.
But then how do you personally, because to go back to one of the things you mentioned earlier, which is confirmation bias, how do you, within your self-righteousness, be careful of that you don't, you know,
get in that loop.
Get in
myself.
There, exactly.
Of course.
Search out information that only proves
supports
that you are right about these
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely, and this is why the internet and social media, I think, might be more globally damaging to humanity than I mean, I know a lot of people are saying it, but the fact that the social media is a confirmation bias machine, and Google, the worm, is a confirmation bias machine.
Literally, as in built into the algorithm is. More you Google things, the more you get information that supports the things.
Yeah, and you can switch that off, but no one does. Because they actually want to only support their own worldview.
Right.
And so the left gets further left and the right gets further right. And all my friends who believe in refugees only hear this stuff. And by the way, I'm left on all these issues. Maybe not as I try to be sensible. Do you know what it is, actually? It's the ease with which we attribute evil as a motive to those we disagree with.
Right.
That's what the internet supports. So all my left friends can only now think that the only reason that there are refugees on Nauru and stuff is that the people doing it are evil people. Now, I don't believe in evil. And I, in fact, more than that, I believe people are fundamentally good and try to do good within their own framework. So I think our refugee policy looks and smells like evil. I think it's terrible. However, that's not helpful and it's not going to sort it out because it's wrong. There's no one evil. Let's lock up the Browns. You know, that there's a lot of that going on subconsciously, but my friends, some of my dear friends are insane about the way they frame this and what they read, and they're absolute. Then I think the left is worse than the right in this. Mm. There's actually a study that I can't quote, but we are not interested in engaging in the narrative of people who are politically opposed to us. We do not listen.
I think there's something, couple of things about that. Both of, that's very fascinating, and I do think that the left can be really guilty of it, because I think there's a thing about the revelations of compassion, like that you suddenly, the minute you accept a progressive position, there is this inherent thing that comes with it that you've always believed that,
yeah,
and you forget the asshole you were a week ago where you didn't know that tranny wasn't a word you should be using.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
The minute that you suddenly know, like, there's something that comes with that.
It's
that
the makes self-righteousness.
You, right.
Mm-hmm.
And you act as if,
you've always been on board with the minutia of trans politics,
right?
You know, in defence of the progressive, at least we listen and
right.
try to learn and adjust hard when we adjust. But you're right. That's right. The reason we're progressive is proximity, right? We've got gay friends and trans friends,
right.
Or at least a friend who has a trans friend, and we, you know, if we're a progressive Jew, it's because we at some point engage with the narrative of a Palestinian, you know, like in that on that issue. So all the people on the right who are not progressive would be progressive with increased proximity, but we're not even going and talking to them.
But all the people on the right are even progressive in relation to human history.
Of course.
So because the nature of humankind is that it eventually progresses. Like,
yep.
This is the thing about progressive politics, even to a certain extent, is at the end of the day, they always still will win, because we do tend to evolve, you know, better human rights and all those things throughout history, regardless of the right and the left.
There might be some swings back, but
right.
It will always eventually go
up.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're going to go back to a time, I hope, that that same-sex marriage, you know, will go backwards rather than it just being a thing that is
society collapses completely,
right.
In which case we go back to...
Well, I mean, if it...
stabbing each other.
That could all still happen. It's
possible. I don't think so, but...
You never know. But
the
thing about the
true.
Refugee thing that I was going to say was that I think there is also a thing about having things right in our face,
yeah,
versus them being an acceptable level away of us having to engage with them on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Because what you found in Australia is, like, when the kids were over in Australia being treated, and then the medical people wouldn't let them go home, and there was great rallying amongst the Australian population of people going, no,
that's
let them stay,
mm-hmm,
because they're there.
Yeah.
What the governments in Australia have done a very good job of is
so
keeping
not,
it an arm's length away of,
yeah,
like, we've got this problem solved. And we're not even going to, you're not even going to have to hear about it.
You don't have to walk past.
We're not going to have to hear. We're going to actually keep it so secret. We're not going to let in journalists. We're not going to report on it. Like,
yeah,
we've just solved it. Don't ask too many questions.
Yeah, you're not.
Look,
yeah,
if you think about it too much, you're not going to like
no.
it.
No.
But we've given you permission.
Don't worry, I'll get my hands dirty so you don't have to.
Look, you know what? We'll give you a couple of excuses. They're coming to take your jobs or they're going to be on unemployment. Pick which one. Probably both. Yeah. They'll be on unemployment and take your jobs. There you go. Is that
and you're on unemployment, but they're going to take your jobs.
Some of them are brown. Probably a terrorist or two. I don't know. Here's some excuses. Yeah. Now, don't think about it too much. Go about your day.
Yeah.
And I think to a lot of reasonable people, because we make those – when I buy my newest iPhone, I'm making that same sort of – tacit agreement in my mind is that I know that iPhones aren't made without some sort of, you know,
suffering
in that system.
Yeah.
But I skip down there and I hand over my money.
We're very good at it.
I think it's terrible that Apple don't pay their share of taxes in Australia, but I still bought my iPhone.
It's cognitive dissonance, right? We're good at running two programs at once. This is like the death thing, right? We understand that our children might get cancer and that death's going to come, but we just run a happier program most of the time unless we get tired at 3 a.m. and the other program rises up. And it's the same with – there is no – it is very, very difficult to decide you're going to live an ethical life, that like you're going to nail it. You know, I'm going to be ethical in every action. It's very, very, very hard. Everything you do, Eddie Perfect had a song or a bit. Oh yeah, a song ages ago called maybe "Taking Myself Away," which was just like the only thing to do is kill yourself, get yourself out of the. Don't be a consumer. Don't be one of these human monsters fucking everything up. Of course, there's ethical problems with that because your loved ones suffer for your death. But, you know, like, but the notion that you should absent yourself from the game is not being the only way to live ethically or be ethical is true. I mean, however, the knowledge of that shouldn't make you go, not going to try.
But also,
a lot of people do that.
But also the argument that I guess it depends if you consider like your human life to be like singularly yours, like whether you are just you at the end of the day and you only have responsibility at the end of the day to fully realize you in whatever way that means, or you have a broader responsibility to someone other than yourself, whether it be your family or a broader society or whatever.
Yeah.
Because that idea of you just killing yourself without wanting to be too macabre about this to people, the ramifications that you would then have on other people's lives, the people who found you, the loved ones who like you,
it's a deeply you forever thing to do.
More have like poisoned their human experience with yours. So you haven't
you'd need to do it before you were born.
Lived.
Yeah.
And didn't recycle.
Yeah.
Maybe that would have actually been a more ethical contribution.
Oh,
you know?
God. I think it's, I think, you know, so you...
Hang on, I'm going to pause just for a second because I'm going to make another coffee and then we can do a time check and we'll come back. Okay, we're back.
Hi, good coffee.
Yeah, okay. I made it in a machine. So ethically, again, you know, those pods, I have to recycle them. But George Clooney does the ads and he uses the money to fund a drone that overlooks a warlord in South Sudan. So ethically, that's how I'm justifying that one.
Does he really?
Yeah, it's true.
He funds a drone that overlooks a warlord.
Yeah. In South Sudan, I think. I think that's where it is. But yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Do all these famous people who do ads use the money for charity?
Yeah, Tim. They all do.
Because I don't understand.
That'd be all right if they
did. I don't understand why else you'd... I don't understand how in the last 10 years it became totally fine when you're an artist to sell a watch. Like, why is that good for you?
I've always had a bit of a thing about... And I did an ad when I first... and it was actually probably the best thing that I ever did in my life, like resetting up my career.
Right.
But I've always thought there's a weird thing between like being an actor in an advertisement, like, you know, if you're an actor or you're a young performer or whatever and you get a role,
you're playing a role,
then sure.
But
that moment where you're like, I'm a celebrity and as a celebrity, I endorse blah, blah, blah. Like, that is a weird thing to me.
I don't understand. That Johnny Depp thing where he gets out of the car and digs a hole and he looks all sexy and he's selling a perfume. Is that a joke?
Also, just in relation to, like, what's going on in Johnny Depp's life, I feel like the idea of him, like, digging a hole in the desert to bury things and...
It sounds about right, doesn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, it's not great. Okay. I want to ask you a few things, and we have a bit of a limited time span here, so I want to
certainly
get to
the listener will turn off pretty soon. So I'll try not to answer everything in 20 minutes.
No. It's good. I like it. I mean, look. To be honest, we've got to some of the things that we normally get to anyway, which is religion and death and what you think happens and all those sort of things.
Talk to anyone who thinks that you have a spirit and shit?
I've had some really cool religious
talk
people.
Talk to any proper ayahuasca, LA ayahuasca types who go take the drug and go on the trip and say they sell God and stuff?
Look, I have had similar experiences to that. Yeah, so I've done those things, in a kind of, searching for, whatever.
I find it very, very interesting.
I was explaining to a friend last night my perspective on life a little, and I said, I am a person who has kind of a bunch of beliefs about what I think life is about and the nature of existence. But I then am very fascinated by what everybody else thinks it's about. And so I'm happy as a tourist to visit other people's bullshit, I guess is the best way I put it.
Yeah.
So if I'm having a conversation with an Islamic person, I would love to know everything about what it is and how they connect to it. I went to a Jewish wedding, a traditionally Jewish wedding where I only knew the couple who were getting married, and they split everyone into men and women. And it was one of the best days of my entire life because I just essentially got to go as a tourist to a whole different, and I was asking about the foods, and I finally learned about the kosher stuff and what it all meant and what the history of it was.
So interesting.
I love it.
Yeah.
I am a person who loves doing all those things. But it doesn't – then when I go back to, but what do I believe? I still I don't go away and go, hey, I'm Jewish now or
No. Some people find that very hard to understand how you can be sure of some stuff without it meaning you're closed-minded or culturally isolated or and this is a bit about – the left's problem as well, which is this sort of notion of relativism, that any idea is as good as another, that you can't say on the left Islam at its core is not a set of beliefs that I think are good for humankind. Obviously even saying that, I know that statement's wrong, but you could say is the idea that a single book holds the word of God is what I mean, is just a bad idea. It's a terrible idea. A terrible idea for ethics and progress and stuff. The idea that a book holds all the secrets, terrible idea. And the Quran might have more sort of doorways to really bad shit than the Bible. In my understanding, they're both pretty fucking terrible,
if you wanted to make arguments for them being terrible, you could make a whole bunch of arguments for each of them.
Yes, and I think currently in the world, I will get in trouble for this because I'm not saying I know, I'm not super educated about Islam. I don't claim to be. I do, however, think, so let's not talk about Islam, any set of ideas that they think are quantified and restrained into one book, and that book is put ahead of other books in education systemically, therefore schools that say you read this, not that. Anything that says women's educational opportunity should be less than men, and I'm not saying that all, obviously not all Islam or all Christianity or whatever, but where it is like that is bad to me. And I think there's a way you can talk about that in a quantifiable sense, in terms of human rights and ethics and progress and how humans are going to exist on this planet going into the future. You can have an argument using our brains and our knowledge and our critical thinking skills to make a judgment call on whether radical Islam, or even not hugely radical Islam, anything other than the most progressive Islam, I'd say it's not as good as humanism. As a sort of pragmatic humanism, the sort of worldview I have, which sounds incredibly self-righteous, but I think that's possible to have that conversation. And I think it's possible to have that conversation without having any problem whatsoever going to a Muslim country, an Islamic country, engaging with their culture and falling madly in love with the people and getting huge benefit from listening to an imam talk about life and how the Quran has affected him. None of that's mutually exclusive. I have no less respect for Muslim A than I do for humanist C. That's nothing to do with it. That's people. I'm talking about root philosophy, the basis of how we think about the world and how we are going to go ahead as humanity in a very busy planet with all these connecting fibers now. There's no borders because of the internet. How do we talk about that without going, oh, no. So person A and person B are equal, but philosophy A and philosophy B are not equal, and we must be allowed to talk about that, I think.
It's interesting, yeah. And it's an interesting topic because for me, you know, what we're talking about again is like the soup. We're agreeing that the soup, like, you know, so the soup being the god or the, like one the, set of ideas or the whatever
the
solution, it is.
The solution, golden
right?
Snitch,
the yeah. Yeah, exactly. We agree that we don't think that there is a soup.
Yes,
so
exactly.
However you made the soup, whatever your recipe for the
you're
soup is.
You're not a bad person for liking
right.
soup
I
or believing
it's wholesome. Soup is, or, yeah, you know, right. And I'm happy to see what your soup is compared to this soup. And yeah. I might actually prefer this soup to that soup.
There you may have be some, such an interesting brain, Will.
But it's pretty much just soup.
Yeah, it's soup and soup.
Oh, sorry. By the way, this episode brought to you by Campbell's Soup.
Heinz.
Like if you could just
that's
really
great.
Subtly
that's great.
Make everything about soup.
This brought to you by Andy Warhol. I think
that'd be a great last piece of Warhol art. If I just got a knock on my door and they're like, it turns out that Andy in like some great last piece of art, like some factory like thing, predicted the rise of podcasts and put some money aside for like.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
The Warhol Estate thanks you. Yeah, so look, and I do understand how hard it is if you're a Muslim listener listening to this and Islam is your culture and your family and your beautiful grandparents and you've got this beautiful text that is at the core of how you self-identify and some wanky, you know, West Australian entitled white male, you know, guy who's read a few books says you're... Basically, what you hear is your culture's less valid than my culture. So I get that. So this is our quandary. How do we say, oh, having one book's bad, and by the way, there's definitely no God. That's a terrible idea that came a long, long time ago, and the only reason you believe it is because you were brainwashed as a child. I mean, that's a set of truths for me. I could be argued out of them if someone argued well, but... Basically, everyone who's religious got told when they were at a very vulnerable right. time and their culture's set up so that breaking from it is very, very difficult. So you run that program. So I'm sure there's that the answer's made by a slightly odd guy in 600 AD are not the answers to the life, the universe and everything.
But is it... And, like, I guess the thing that I would ask is that... There's a difference between that, like acknowledging that and actually invalidating somebody's
that's right.
choice or existence. Because, I mean, I won't use a soup analogy this time.
No.
I'm going to use a football one, right?
Okay, good.
So,
much better.
Like, imagine like all the different belief systems as being like football teams.
Now, which they are, by the way.
My football
that's exactly
team
what they are.
Hasn't been in a grand final since 1961. But you couldn't convince me that I would have got any more joy in my life out of the struggle and like whatever involvement.
Who hasn't been
in
a grand final since 61?
The Footscray, the Western
Bulldogs.
Oh,
of course.
And they are playing in their preliminary final this weekend, which means they might play in their first grand final.
We're
since
very excited, yes. I forgot that. My family is very excited now the Dockers are out that the doggies might get up. Yeah.
Anyway, whatever.
Yes,
my
okay. That's another podcast.
That, you know, my religion, my thing, my way of life, my choices, my philosophy doesn't need to be the one that wins every year. I don't actually have to, like, why can't we just get to a point where I can just like, yeah, okay, we're like competing and it's the marketplace of ideas and all those sort of things. But also I can just choose to support this team that, you know, I know probably isn't going to win all the time, but gives me a different connection and life story. And that's my
true,
passion.
But unfortunately where your analogy falls down is where it really matters, which is that football teams don't have outcomes that are things like equality, education, and death and life.
No, and what I'm saying is we should add that to football.
I know. Yes.
Really put something on
the line. If you win a grand final, you get books.
Exactly. You can burn whatever books you like in the name of your...
I think I think that's true. I do understand how absurdly sort of how brutally sort of offensive it would seem if you're an intelligent, loving Muslim, as of course, you know, the vast majority of Muslims, just like the vast majority of people, are good, loving people, to hear someone say, there's no truth in your truth.
Right.
But does that mean no one ever says that? And if so, we're fucked because we can't say that soup doesn't cure cancer. We have to be able to quantify our beliefs and talk about how they will impact the world, you know. And I think religion has done great good through my hypothesis is that religion is a net bad in the world. Now that we have so many other ways to talk about the world, I don't think it's a net bad in history. It's impossible. I suspect it is. I suspect if we'd gone more with the Greeks rather than sacking the Library of Alexandria and going towards the Christians, I think that would have been better. But there's no way to say that. Right. You can't judge that.
Know.
All we can say is now, let's look what we've got. Let's look what we know. Right. Let's give people... Let's not, in London, open a whole lot more faith schools and segregate children by their parents' erroneous beliefs. Let's talk about this. And in talking about it, we have to make a judgment call on whether one set of beliefs is better than the other.
Right.
Oh, my God, it's so hard. I mean, then you're an arsehole.
But it is hard because it's like that, you know, and I think this is why sometimes, like, we just wait for generations to die out so we can move on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you see it, you know, with the younger generations on things. And this is what I talk about, the nature of, you know, progressive things. But yeah. Sometimes there is that backlash, you know, and when we get torn apart and we're in this, like, age, as you said, full of confirmation bias where, yeah. You know,
you the only information, read what you need to read.
Yeah. Is that one of those points where it just becomes, I guess, like a perfect storm again for, yeah. I mean, well, you've seen it already with like Brexit and what's Trumpy. Happening in America with Trump. So let's talk about that to finish because I'm interested in your perspective. Ugh. As being a person who's from other,
yeah.
But here now and like, you know, making a life and a good life in America. And I think, you know, enjoying yourself here, like feeling like it's a...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm moving back to Sydney next Christmas. I mean, okay. We've got an out plan.
All right, yeah.
And maybe this Christmas if Trump gets in.
So you know. What's your take on the whole thing? Do you think there is a chance that he could get in? Like... People ask me all the time, and I forever said no, but the more you say no, he keeps coming and coming, yeah. And coming. So.
Well, I didn't think there was a possibility that the English would vote to leave Europe, but my assumption was based on the fact that every frickin' expert, every person who knew anything about economics or geopolitics or history, they all went, don't leave Europe, you frickin' idiots. And all the people went, I don't care.
Right.
And like Michael Gove said, we're sick of experts. That's my take on it. It's
well, the other
it
thing
is the
is,
loss of respect
in that
for
echo
expertise.
Chamber mm-hmm. sense. Like, I didn't think it would happen because all the people I follow from the UK
exactly
on
right.
Twitter are fucking lefty comedians.
Yeah,
and I
it's
could
exactly right. So in America, it's the same thing, and it is. I banged on a bit about this. When I talked to Herring on Herring's podcast recently. It relates to what I was just saying then about how offensive it would be if you're an intelligent Muslim listening to me talk. You'd just be like, dude, I hate you, you know. Similarly, we've got to a point where because it's very, very hard to know what good information is because of the internet. The good information and bad information kind of look the same. There's no curation of the quality of information.
Right.
There used to be like, well, if you want to know what good stuff is, go to a university or read the Encyclopedia Britannica. And obviously it's massively flawed, but at least, you know, and Wikipedia is infinitely better source of information than anything else on the internet. And yet people go, bloody Wikipedia, it's a liberal conspiracy. So even Wikipedia, even this incredible thing, which I know has a lot of problems, but it's an incredible thing. Do not come to me and go, bloody Wikipedia. Wikipedia is the most incredible human collation of human information ever. It is absolutely remarkable. And the fact we take it for granted is ridiculous.
People are always like, you know, they're like, well, it's not as accurate as the encyclopedia. And I was like, pretty sure there wasn't a whole page on me in the encyclopedia.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like Wikipedia is covering off a little bit more than the encyclopedia.
It's so much more accurate en masse. There are a lot more flaws because there's... But it's a moving thing. Like knowledge is, it's a moving thing. And obviously you can bugger it up, but... But, you know, if you want to know something, you're better off going to Wikipedia than just typing, is Donald Trump a genius, into internet, you know. But apart from Wikipedia, we shouldn't have to say apart from Wikipedia, but the fact is people find the information that suits their biases. And so what we have is a situation where the notion that being more educated means you have better information about a thing. Now, note the absurdity of this sentence. The notion that being more educated means you know more about a thing, have more expertise on a thing, is in question. We now seem to think that just because you're educated on a thing, don't tell me what to do. So it's like society has gone, yeah, you might be a microbiologist, but I'm going to have soup, not antibiotics, you know. And the idea that we're going to vote for Trump, who's never read a book and has never done any politics and is putting aside that he's quite clearly got a personality disorder and he's just a total knobber, because that's a judgment call. What you don't have to make a judgment call on is that he's a dodgy businessman who's never doesn't read books. He's not interested in humanity or politics or diplomacy. Hillary, there's a lot of problems with Hillary because of how deeply she's been embedded in this big, big, dirty machine.
Well, because he is a reaction to the system, the fact that she is so representative of the system is obviously a problem, because he has grown literally out of that frustration with the system.
Yeah.
And you couldn't get somebody who at least feels from an outsider's point of view. You could make a bunch of arguments going, she's a woman who's going to be president. That is a complete rejection of the system just on that very basic level.
But that's not the way
it is. That's not the way we look at it.
So look at the guy Elizabeth Warren slammed yesterday, the head of Wells Fargo Bank. If you've been traveling, you might not have seen that video. You've got to watch it. So imagine Hillary is as bad as one of those bankers who ran scams for years and then collapsed the world economy, right? Mm. Maybe she is. I don't think she is. I think she's an incredible woman, and therefore I lose the ears of any right-wing listeners of your podcast, of which there's probably three.
Yeah.
I think she's done
amazing
things.
Mostly hate listening, so they'll probably just, be honest, they'll probably just really be strapping themselves in there. Yeah. They're like, I wanted to get to the stuff where I could really hate him.
Yeah, totally. Here we go.
Yeah.
But let's say Hillary's terrible and she's a warmonger and stuff, and let's be like my lefty friends and pretend that any act of war is just an act of hate and aggression, and that there is no historical precedent for the need for it. I wish there was no war too. I think it's probably really, really hard running America in terms of military and stuff. So let's say war is just bad and Hillary's terrible and stuff. Let's say she's like the head of Wells Fargo, who ran the scam between 2008, whatever, up to 2008. Collapse the thing. It's literally like they're going, we hate those bankers, let's vote in a clown,
right?
And he'll run the banks, an actual clown, like a clown
who
does
clown.
Kids' party, a children's party clown, like a children's party clown who's like known for his balloon animals, but they always pop.
Exactly. He's not a Cirque du Soleil clown.
No, he's like he's a slightly dodgy children's clown who may have touched up some of the kids, and who's known for his balloon animals, but like 50% of them pop.
Right, yeah.
Let's get him to run the banks. That's better than that asshole. I'm sorry. Even if Hillary is the biggest asshole banker Wall Street fuck in the world, I would rather the bank run by a corrupt banker than a children's kiddie fiddling party clown.
This might not be a question that I know we need to finish up in a second, so I don't want to like bog you down in something, and I don't want to ask you a question that you don't want to answer. So if you don't want to answer it, that's fine.
But I'm gay.
No. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on like the Jimmy Fallon Trump thing. Did you see?
Oh yes, that? But I didn't follow any. By the way, I'm trying not to read as much internet. So he did something with his hair.
Yeah, I mean the fact that he had him on and he didn't kind of really ask him anything. You know, the argument was made that perhaps with the, you know, the opinions that he has and whatever, getting him on and just like kind of making him unlovable by, you know, kind of tussling his hair and like, you know, playing fun and games with
Fallon's
him.
Fallon's a traitor.
That maybe that isn't an appropriate thing to do as an entertainer, or that maybe it should, you know, you have a responsibility to be more hard hitting, or, you know, I don't know. Like, do you have thoughts
on
that?
Well, I have very strong thoughts on false balance, right? So ABC, BBC and certain, this notion that this is the soup thing. So there's a notion that you should be balanced.
Right.
And this, it all connects, and perhaps is a good way to end, it all connects to this idea that what we're talking about, that all ideas are equal, and that to claim that some are better than others is an act of microaggression towards whatever minority group or whoever holds those positions, right? So some people would hold that, don't, you know, Big Pharma just wants you to believe soup doesn't cause cancer, and you can have these arguments. So in the media we go, oh, we've got a party clown and a slightly, you know, maybe corrupt politician. We better, and half of America think the party clown's a better idea than the corrupt politician. We better represent them half and half, do the right thing by the balance. No. Fallon's people must make a judgment call on what ideas are worthy to put in the world. You wouldn't get the head of the Ku Klux Klan on and let him talk about, you know, like, seem charming, you know, when his dad lynched, you know, whatever. Like, it's not okay. Trump's ideas are not equal. They're not equal, and you don't give them equal time. If Fallon got Trump on by way of going, well, he should be balanced, that's bullshit. Absolute bullshit. Trump's a fucking clown. He shouldn't be given... We should all just shut the fuck up about him. Like, I've never tweeted about him ever in my life. Every day I get this stuff and I just want to go... I did, but I didn't name him the other day. I wrote a description of him without naming him, just let people assume who I was talking about. but I have tried to do my bit and just go, shut up. Shut up. If a year ago the media had just gone, ah, he's just a knobber. We're going to write about a female coming into power and the positive, you know, like, that, not that they should be editorializing, but are you fucking joking? Trump needs more exposure? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, shut up about him. He's a dick. Just don't talk about him. Now it's too late and we have to just do everything we can to talk about his bad sides.
All right, Tim, I know you have to go. So let's finish it up. Plug something. You got something to plug?
No, I've got nothing to plug. I got a show in New York on November 3rd at the Beacon, going on after poor old Patton Oswalt. Not poor old Patton Oswalt. Dear Patton Oswalt. And then, you know, my musical opens next March on Broadway. And, you know, I don't really perform much anymore. I wish I did. I'll do it again soon. And that's all. I'm making a children's movie at the moment. That's what I do with my life.
There are so many other things that we could have talked about, but we didn't get to them because that was the time we had. So
we'll do it again.
You know what?
This only took two years to get together.
We can do part two, but that's good. We were going to talk about Cardinal Pell. We'll talk about that another time. To be continued.
Look it up.
Exactly. I'm doing some shows. I'm just going to do a quick plug of that. I'm doing some shows. Giant Dwarf in Sydney, which is the Chasers venue in October. It is six shows only. I only do these things occasionally, but they're fully improvised stand-up shows, so every night is completely different, and we just make it all up in the room, and it's fun.
Holy shit.
It's fun. They're fun shows normally, so there's a few tickets left if you want to come along to those. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Will, for having me.
Bye. I wanna be a girl. I wanna see the world. God, I know I can't be without you.